Thought Leader Thursdays are sponsored by Associated Bank. Whether you're buying, building, or refinancing a home, Associated Bank is dedicated to finding the right mortgage solution for you. Visit associatedbank.com/thoughtleadership. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
We begin front and center this morning with our Thought Leader conversation, and Wayne Janis is here this morning. Wayne is the president of the financial planning practice at Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank. Lots to cover this morning about financial planning and money. Wayne, good morning. Welcome back to the opening bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. It's nice to see you again. I have lots of questions about money this morning, and you're our expert on this. First of all, I want to talk to you about just why some people find it so hard to talk about money. Is it because it's just confusing or it's too private or they don't understand what's going on? Why would you say that is?
It is very personal. It's kind of, for men, it's almost a measuring stick of whether you're doing a good job to your family, and it's very private. You don't want people to know because you don't want them to judge you because you're spending more money than you should, or that maybe you should be picking up the tab more often because you got all this money sitting in the bank.
Right.
And so people don't want to know what they have because they don't want to have to change their behavior based upon your judgment of them.
Yeah, my stamp collecting is a little out of control. I'm going to admit that right now. I've been spending a little too much on that. But isn't it dangerous to not have this conversation with about money in some cases? Like, especially if you're working for me and I'm your client, I need to talk to you and be honest and open about my money, don't I?
Yeah, I think if you're working with an advisor, and it's an independent advisor who's not selling something, life insurance or an annuity or a mutual fund. If you have somebody that's actually advising you, they have an expertise that is beyond yours. Plus, you've got a job, and so your focus is on your job. You got a family. You've got things you're doing. You don't have the time to spend to understand all the things that may impact your financial situation. So, getting to an expert, and the key is the expert. You have to be talking to people that are experts. And what does a financial person have to be an expert in? Taxes, insurance, investments, estate planning and how title passes, powers of attorney for medical care. It runs the gamut of so many things. And so not every advisor can speak intelligently about those things. But if you deal with experienced advisors, they know when they don't know something and they know who to bring into the team if you need to worry about powers of attorney for medical care and how to get them.
You just hit on some very important things that an advisor should know. How do we know if we've got a good advisor? Are there things that we can ask them if they don't offer up that you've just said? How do we know?
Well, there's a lot of, you've got the CFP, the Financial Planners Organization. You've got accounting firms, CPA organizations that have groupings of people that do financial planning for clients. And so one way is to check their credentials. What are they? Are they a CPA? Are they a lawyer? Do they have a master's in tax? Are they a certified financial planner? What is their background? What is their experience? And I think the most important one to ask is, if I listen to you and I follow your advice, how do you get paid?
Yeah.
Do I write you a check and pay you for your time?
Mm-hmm.
Or have you just convinced me I should buy a whole life insurance policy that's going to pay you a 20% commission? So understanding not only how you get paid, but how much you're going to get paid if I follow your advice, I think I'd make that the number one axiom if you're talking with people who are using advisor. Know what happens if you give them money to invest in something, how much of it goes to them.
My biggest fear is giving a lot of money up front, paying a lot of money up front to an advisor before any work is done at all. That's always one of my biggest fears. Is that do other people share that concern, or is that generally how it's done?
I haven't had that experience because we don't do that. We don't say, okay, we're going to charge you $5,000 to put together a total financial plan. What we typically do is we say, we're going to charge you $1,200 a quarter,
okay,
to do the plan. And generally speaking, most of the labor component is in the front half of that because you're meeting, you're putting together things, getting data. And so generally speaking, we've put in the time that exceeds that $5,000 even before all of the checks have been written.
I saw an article recently about back to the question of, you know, asking questions about money and talking to your advisor, that one of the most common questions is, am I normal? Is my situation normal? How does it compare to others? Is that, do you agree with that, or do you find other questions are more common?
I can't say that I get that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, people might say, am I spending too much money? But, you know, that's arithmetic. Because if you're talking about whether they're spending too much money, or are they providing for the future properly, are they putting money in the right places so the kids can go to college without incurring a $300,000 student loan, it's all about behavior now and modifying instant gratification for future gratification so the kids can go to college, so you can retire at 55 and not 95.
Right.
So when we talk to people about what's normal, what we talk about is, what's normal to you is you have objectives, and you're not going to attain those objectives if you spend every penny you make now. And any of those future objectives, if they constantly get pushed to the back of the room, then you're not going to meet your objectives, and you will be working until you're 95. Yeah.
It almost sounds like when you start an exercise program, they tell you no pain, no gain. You got to put in the pain to get the gain, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, the clients that they do. And that isn't to say that you have to squirrel away all your money and live like a hermit. It's all about balance.
Yeah.
You know, balancing. And the first thing that you want them to give up on isn't necessarily the putting 10% of their income into a savings plan. Maybe it's cutting back on how much you're going to spend on your vacation, or maybe putting off buying a new car for another year. The first thing that gets cut for people that are unsuccessful is savings. Everything else stays there. We got to go on vacation. We got to buy that new car. We got, you know, and if they don't change that behavior, and they use reducing savings or eliminating savings as always their option, what do you think the result's going to be?
Yeah, I think we all know the answer to that one. Wayne, I want to hit some topics this morning while you're here. Got a couple of questions. Let's talk about insurance. What are the right kinds of insurance that we should have, that you tell your clients to make sure that they have?
There's all kinds of insurance. You know, there's the liability insurance, umbrella insurance, there's medical insurance, there's life insurance and disability insurance. I think it's kind of a subject we could talk about for an hour, but I'd like to focus on two areas where I see the things that trouble me the most for young people, and where I have three young sons, and having them understand how to protect their families properly. And so, if you have a family and you're in your 30s, you got a wife, and whether she works or not, or whether it's the wife that's working or the husband that's the stay-at-home parent, mm-hmm. or working part-time, you've got a lot of obligations: mortgage, rent, trying to raise these kids, and there's a fear if I die, who's going to make up my $60,000 paycheck? And so they go to get insurance. And because whole life insurance is so much more profitable to sell than term insurance, most people I see end up going with the whole life insurance. And to give you an example of how that works, I had one of my contacts in insurance run some numbers for me, and I said, for the 33-year-old guy with a couple of kids and a wife who's in good health, what would it cost him to get $1 million of life insurance for 20 years? So when he's 51, the kids are through college, and he's getting closer to retirement, so he may not need it then. What is it going to cost him for the next 20 years for that $1 million of coverage? $500 a year.
Wow.
For a million.
That's...
How much would I get for that same price in a whole life insurance? $50,000.
Wow.
You die at $50,000, you haven't even covered 1 year's income for your family.
Yeah.
But that's what most people buy, because they don't get – they're buying from somebody that says they're an advisor that's really just selling an expensive product. So the other thing that people worry about, they worry about the dying, and they try to do what's right there. But when you're 31, 32 years old, my kids, they like to ski. They like to do water skiing. They're active. And I said, yeah, I've got a half a dozen or more clients who are disabled. They all have disability insurance. And for you that are 30, 35 years old, you're 10 times more likely in the next 20 years to become disabled rather than die. The only way your family gets money is if you die. If you have no disability insurance, you're still alive. You're still being fed. maybe you need more care. And if there's no disability insurance, poof. Yeah. Most companies offer disability insurance. And they allow you even to buy more disability insurance than the number that they give you. And that is something people don't talk about. Think about life, but they don't. You're 10 times more likely to become disabled, yeah. And they talk about life insurance.
Yeah, it seems like, that, you know, I know we talk a lot about investments like stocks and other things. That seems like a really smart investment is to have that insurance in place.
And it's cheap.
Yeah.
And the reason that people say, how can that be possible that some insurance company, Prudential, is going to give me $1 million of insurance for $500 a year? And the answer is, most of those policies, because they're young people take them out, 30 years old, by the time the 15 or 20 years is up, because the premium is guaranteed for 20 years. At the end of the 20 years, the premium doesn't go from 500 to 600. It goes to 12,000. So 90% of those policies lapse. So all the premiums that are collected by the insurance company for all those people, they never pay out on them. That's how they can keep the overall price down and why term insurance is very cheap. Now, if you're a wealthy person and you don't necessarily need insurance, but the income tax laws favor insurance and the estate tax laws favor insurance. So buying insurance where all of the income and all the gains can come out free from income tax and estate tax for wealthy families is something that most families in the multi-million dollar category use, not necessarily for the death benefit, but for the economics of the insurance and the tax effect. Because if the money is free of federal tax and state tax, and estate tax, and Illinois estate tax, you're talking about some huge numbers of being able to pass wealth on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different kind of life insurance than what I'm talking about, is protecting my family if I'm 31 years old and I got three kids and I'm making $60,000 a year. And if I die, who's going to come up with the $60,000?
Another real-life scenario question. Should I repay my credit card debt or invest in my 401k plan? What do you say here?
Credit card debt is a real monkey on your back. For people that have it's diabolical. It just eats you up because interest rates could be 20, 25, 28%. And so, it's something that I've always preached to my kids to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you have it. You got this credit card debt. But you also work for a company that will allow you to invest in their 401k plan, and they match it 100% up to the first 6% of your income. So let's say that you have somebody that makes $100,000, and they pay off $6,000 of their charge card. At 25%, whatever the rate, they've saved $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Right, 25% of 6,050. So, and that's phenomenal because of that. That's also a non-deductible $1,500. On the other hand, if instead of doing that, they give the money to their employer and put it into a 401k plan, and the company matches it 100%. Well, now instead of making $1,500 in saved interest, you just made $6,000. On top of that, in your tax bracket, you're going to save another $2,000 in federal and state tax. So the $6,000 going into the 401k plan saved you $8,000 versus $1,500. That's a huge difference to not take advantage of. Plus, the money that you put into a 401k plan, you deduct it from your Illinois tax. When you ultimately take it out of the 401k plan, you don't pay Illinois tax on it, at least under current law. It's tax-free. Deductible going in, free coming out. And so the power of putting money into the 401k where it's matched, if it's not matched, then you're dealing with a different scenario because then credit card debt starts to look a little more attractive
as
the first option of being paid off.
Sure. There's another question I want to get to, too. It's one that I think a lot of people are impacted by. We hear a lot about student loan debt these days. So what if I'm engaged to be married to somebody who has $200,000 in student loan debt? Should I just call it off and move on to the next person?
Well, How much loan debt do you have?
I have zero. Let's say I have zero. Okay. Yeah.
If you had $300,000, you'd say, "Well, we have $500,000." The right.
But let's say I have zero, and they have $200,000.
Yeah, I work with some attorneys, a couple in particular that are friends of mine. I've been working with them a long time, and they're involved in divorce litigation. And the statistics are very high. That one of the major sources of broken marriages is money. Financial problems, you can't pay the bills, you're trying to pay off the debt, and at the same time, you want to buy or rent a house, you want to have a family, and the fact that you have that debt there impedes your ability to get attractively priced car loans, attractively priced mortgages, and so it puts a pressure on the relationship. I'm not saying that love won't overcome, but I think it's You can't just go into it blindly and think that it's just going to go away by itself.
Right.
Well, if the person that has the $200,000 of student loan is a surgeon who's going to be making $500,000 a year, that's not a problem. But I have one client of mine who paid his daughter's education off, struggled, and she had no debt, and she married a guy who's a musician. And he was a wonderful musician, but he's making $30,000 a year with a $300,000 student loan debt. They can't buy a car.
Yeah.
They can't buy a house, and they're putting off having kids. Those all put pressure on the relationship, and so go into it with your eyes wide open. Don't think this thing is going to just poof go away.
And if you get divorced, you split that, don't you? You split paying that back, right?
And my divorce lawyer also said, it's very difficult to have a prenuptial agreement, but he said, if you've got that kind of a disparity, if somebody's got this debt, it's probably a good idea to set up a program where if you do get divorced, it's clear that that obligation goes with the person that ran it up.
Yeah.
And then you don't end up sharing in it. Or if you used marital money to pay down that debt, that is part of the marital settlement, you get it back because you paid off his or her debt.
Oh, okay. We talk about it being hard to talk about money with your financial advisor. I can't imagine talking to a fiancé about money and having this discussion. It would be pretty sticky, I think.
I got to tell you, it's... I've seen it break up more than one engagement.
Wow.
Because you're planning a divorce, the prenuptial, and when you get to the lawyers who really put it out there, and it is so cold, and there's no feeling to the agreement. It's a contract that says, we get divorced, you get this. If we're married for 3 years, we'll give you more money. So there's an earn-out period if you're married longer. And, you start talking about these things, it is, and that's probably why... people don't typically hire their divorce lawyers or prenuptial lawyers to do any work after that because it puts a real wedge. For better or for worse, until death do us part, but not with my money.
Exactly. Wayne, great conversation this morning. How can people get a hold of you if they want to have a personal conversation about all this?
Well, I'm with Whitnell, WJANUS at Whitnell, WHITNELL.com.
We'll see you again next time.
Good. Great talking to you.
Wayne Janis is the president of the financial planning practice at Whitnell, an affiliate of Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. Remember, you can hear thought leader conversations every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. And follow more of their conversations over at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. And follow Associated Bank on Twitter at Associated Biz. We're going to continue our conversation with Wayne after the bell this morning, and we'll post that in the podcast of the broadcast a little bit later on this morning.